Bro, your Pornhub is just filled with cartoons, bro. No man that beats off to cartoons is gonna beat me. Calm down. And with that, welcome to Really Stop It, your show where the news of the day is usually given just enough time, but sometimes not enough. If it's your first time listening, we thank you. If you're ready for something you won't find anywhere else, I'm John Franklin, and that must mean that's the godfather of Fight Night Picks, Craig Allen. Craig, how are you?
John, let's get into it. Hey, listen, I mean, when this episode comes out, you can see it behind me. You can see it on the shirt. It's Canada Day, John. So happy Canada Day to my fellow Canadians. I got ready for the show listening to a little bit of the Guess Who and a little bit of Gordon Lightfoot. So I turned back the clock, but that was the way that I was going with it. I'm excited to be back with the show. I teased it on Twitter. So if you follow the page, Fight Night Picks on Twitter, you saw that the show was coming back. We're looking forward to it. It's International Fight Week. You're in Phoenix. I'm in Canada, which only means one thing, John. We're not going to International Fight Week, apparently. Company couldn't afford it. But no, I am looking forward to it. There's some great fights this week. The Hall of Fame ceremony is on Thursday. It kind of sucks that there's no Ultimate Fighter finale, but I don't think anybody's watching the Ultimate Fighter anyway. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm glad to be back.
I'm excited too. And you know, it's today not Thursday. So, you know, it's interesting. I was all scheduled to go to International Fight Week. Had the time, had the everything allocated, and my engine blew up in my car. And could I have flown there? Sure, but I wanted to drive there. I like driving to Vegas. It's part of my summer ritual pre-pandemic. So, you know, my engine going out kind of took the wind out of me for the whole thing. But at some point, we need to make a promise to each other to go to International Fight Week together. Maybe next year's the year. But for now, there you go, pinky promises. But for now, on this episode, we talk featherweight goats, dream super fights, and overmatched cripplers. We begin, Craig, with Israel Adesanya. Craig, the last style bender, is back with a good matchup, actually on paper, but not a big name, and seemingly not a big fight. So the question I have for you to kick this thing back off is this fight to keep Izzy busy, or is everyone sleeping on what should be a good fight and a big fight?
You didn't miss a beat with this time away. Like, wow, that's a great intro. You know, we opened the show up with a quotable from the press conference with Sean Strickland. He said a lot of weird things because, I mean, Sean Strickland, a little bit of a different cat, but he was like, well, you know, Alex Pereira knocked you out. And Izzy's like, yeah, but did you even watch the fights? And Sean Strickland's like, no, I don't watch fights. And then they kept going and Sean Strickland stands up like he's doing a comedy routine. And he's like, yeah, well, this guy's going to fight you again. He's going to beat you. Well, Sean, that means that Alex Pereira beat you to fight Israel Adesanya, you knucklehead. So I don't know if Sean Strickland knew what he was talking about, but I say all of this because that fight almost feels more important than the title fight that's in the main event. I know it might sound strange. It's already doing better numbers on our channel, so take that for what it's worth. But when I do look at this fight overall, Israel Adesanya's taking on a challenger and Jared Cannonier. His 5-1 in. He's got a couple of wins. He's got the loss, obviously, to Robert Whittaker, where first kick that Whittaker threw up higher than, you know, his rib cage broke Cannonier's arm, and then he kept fighting. But all in all, the wins that Cannonier has, Derek Brunson's last win where Cannonier got dropped in the first round and almost finished, a little bit of leniency from the referee. He ends the fight, but if you watch that fight, Derek Brunson was completely gassed in the second round of that one, and it was just a nice elbow in tight that started to be the end of Brunson, so to speak. So I look at this as Cannonier, he's a pretty big underdog. Not a lot of people are rooting for him. Some people are saying it's a trap card of a fight, but to really answer the question, I mean, I think Israel Adesanya is a big star, obviously, Anzac region, big star. I think in North America, he is. Maybe it's just me reading too much into him. I like his personality. I like what he brings to MMA because he's a different guy in his own right, and you need characters like that in it. But yeah, I don't think it's a giant fight. I think it's a giant fight card. I think the headliner might not be the biggest high-profile fight.
See, here's where I struggle with that because it used to not matter. It used to not matter who Izzy was fighting. It used to not matter. He was just one of these guys that could sell a fight no matter what. And Cannonier, listen, we used to say this about Vitor Belfort, right? Vitor Belfort only loses to studs. Well, man, you could start to make that case for Jared Cannonier. I mean, I'm looking at Jan Blachowicz, Dominic Reyes, and Robert Whittaker in recent history. Now,
the heavyweight knockout loss to Sean Jordan.
Sean Jordan. It's been a minute, but so now listen, has he had some favorable booking? Sure. Has he caught some guys kind of when they weren't, you know, going the best? Sure. So, you know, we've talked about this for years about you look at a guy's resume, it doesn't always tell the story. But I don't know. I mean, Cannoneer is not the guy that's going to sell a fight, but I used to think that Izzy could carry one on his own. And I just don't know if I feel that way now. Do you think, you know, the UFC has said, and we'll get to this later in more depth, but UFC has said, hey, we kept working during the pandemic and we kept things moving and we kept things going. Do you think that they lost any momentum with a guy like Izzy during the pandemic? Do you think people just aren't ready to come back in that way? Or do you think, I don't know what I'm talking about, and this fight's going to do a huge number?
I think it'll do all right numbers, but again, it's just because of the depth of the card. We'll talk about it later on, but you've got Sean O'Malley. You've got, like, big younger stars. Ian Garry, really polarizing with Fight Night Picks fans. His fight with Gabe Green, I love that fight. Obviously, the old guy fights, Robbie Lawler, Brian Barberena, Miller, Cerrone 2. Like, there's a lot of depth on this card. That's why it's my favorite one this year. I just don't think the headliner sells it. So the one thing I want to do, John, I want to move forward because we can talk about the count. You love him. I love him. Michael Bisping, he's got a pretty successful YouTube channel. And I'd say he had a pretty successful MMA career, all things told. But this week, he was talking about the trilogy between Volkanovski and Max Holloway. And he said this, and I quote, if Volkanovski pulls it off, he will be, without a shadow of a doubt, the greatest featherweight that the UFC has ever seen. Of course, that was Jose Aldo, the King of Rio. Then Conor McGregor knocked him out in 13 seconds. But then he never defended the belt. He vacated, went up to 155. Therefore, whilst McGregor had a crazy run at 145, he doesn't go down as one of the greats. So listen, I understand, John Franklin, you're an old head, but is Jose Aldo the greatest featherweight of all time? Does McGregor even have a case in this division? Or will it be Volkanovski? Or does Max Holloway even have a shot on this one?
Well, listen, Jose Aldo is in a precarious position. And that precarious position is the people who are contending with him to be the featherweight goat, have beaten him, right? So, yeah, Max Holloway gave it up to him this week. And I think Volkanovski at times has given it up to him as well. But they both beat him. So it's like you're telling me, yeah, who has a more impressive resume? Probably Jose Aldo. Definitely Jose Aldo. But when you lose to Conor, and then you lose to Max twice, and you lose to Volkanovski, and however controversial it was, you lose to Marlon Moraes, you lose to Piotr Jan, it doesn't matter what weight you're at. It doesn't matter. You don't get extra points for degree of difficulty. He lost those fights. They're on his resume, and these are the guys that are staking claim to the featherweight GOAT, and he has losses to them.
Yeah, like I think Volkanovski is right there, but I mean, you look at Jose Aldo's resume, you want to go from whether it was when he was fighting in Rio to WEC, beats Jonathan Brookins, who won the Ultimate Fighter, he beats Cub Swanson, Mike Brown, Uriah Faber, Manny Gamburin, Mark Hominick in the UFC, that was at UFC 129, in Canada, that was Toronto at the Rogers Center, Kenny Florian, Chad Mendes, Frankie Edgar, Korean Zombie, the Llamas fight was wild, Chad Mendes, and then, yeah, of course, McGregor. He beats Edgar, has the two title fights, and then ultimately, after a while, he makes the move down to 135. I don't think 135 taints his legacy at all. He's not like BJ Penn at the end of his run, losing, what, like 7 in a row? So, and again, I'm still one of those guys. I say, like, BJ Penn, Benson Henderson, Frankie Edgar, like, you got to consider them as some of the greats at lightweight. But to me, it's Jose Aldo. Max Holloway's like right there. But again, like you said, Volkanovski's beaten Holloway twice. Whether or not you thought Holloway won the first fight or the second fight, they were really close. A lot of people seem to think Holloway won the second one, Volkanovski won the first one, but there's still W's on the record of Volkanovski and he still has the belt. So I look at the guys that Volkanovski's beat. I mean, whether it was beating Jeremy Kennedy, Mizuto, Hirota, or all the guys on the way up through, he still had to go through a buzzsaw up the top. Some of the similar names that these guys had to beat as well. So for me, if Volkanovski wins, especially soundly this weekend, maybe then you do let him lay the claim. But I look at this argument like I look at the one at 170 pounds. And just because of the t-shirt, like I have to, for the rest of my life, because I was a kid when it happened, I have to go with my guy GSP over Kamaru Usman. But I can tell you, like, what Usman has done and is doing is really, really impressive at 170.
Yeah, and I'll throw one more log onto the fire of this argument, which is that, you know, some of the ways, and listen, I've written in MMA before, I've done podcasts, I'm as much to blame as anybody else, but the way that MMA is written about is not the same way that boxing is written about, and there's sort of a mythology that comes with boxing. Part of it is because it came to really prominence in the 60s, 70s, 80s, when it was pre, like, you know, the great writers wrote for Sports Illustrated. Like, Chuck Mendenhall in 1980 would have wrote...
Like Burt Sugar.
Chuck Mendenhall would have wrote for Sports Illustrated in the 80s. You know, now he writes for, like, The Ringer or whatever. So here's my point. The way that these guys would have been processed as boxers, it would have been that they all sort of fought each other, and they would have been, it would have been looked at as like a time frame as opposed to who's best. It would have been like, oh yeah, Jose Aldo was great. He fought Holloway and then he fought Volkanovski. And we would have, the way I think someone should do, and they won't be able to do this because the UFC holds the rights to everything and the UFC will never do it, is you should look at these guys as a, like, clump them together. Almost like, and listen, this is something I beat to death if you're a fan of Early Stoppage, so here it comes one more time. Hagler, Hearns, Leonard, Duran. Like, you should process these guys like those guys in the lore of the UFC. It shouldn't just be we tell these great stories when it's time for the Hall of Fame. It should be beyond that. And we move on, Craig. Talk has started again about the aforementioned Conor McGregor and Jorge Masvidal fighting once again. And there has even been whispers on the Underground Whisper Network. Actually, I think it's been tweeted and talked about publicly, but we'll invoke the Underground Whisper Network once again of the BMF belt maybe making an appearance. Craig, at the stage these two men are at in their respective careers, is this the fight that makes the most sense for both men, and should the BMF title be on the line?
Well, can Jorge Masvidal even fight? Because, like, he's got that Colby Covington thing still kind of looming large and nobody talks about it. So let's just assume for a minute that that's not a big deal. And usually your biggest December card, where do they host that? When the world was open, where do they host their big December card?
I don't know, because November was in Brooklyn.
Toronto.
Oh.
They always have it in Toronto. So usually they do it there. I would assume that, like, a Masvidal-McGregor card would make sense for, what, Vegas or New York? Like, those are probably the two that you want to go to. But I mean, I look at this one like, yeah, why wouldn't you do it? Like, Masvidal hasn't won a meaningful fight in some time. It's been a long time since he went on his buzzsaw run, beating the Darren Tills and so on and so forth to get the first title shot. Since then, it is what it is. Obviously, Nate Diaz is out there. Like, you can kind of throw his name in with these two other guys. But when it comes to McGregor and his road to a return, Dana White talking about what, later on this year, like from summer on into fall. So it really does set things up well for the end of the year. I think McGregor, listen, I mean, it was a hell of a ride at 145 pounds, and it was a great fight against Eddie Alvarez. But since then, it's been pretty rocky for him too. And we're going to talk about Cerrone in this show, but that win is a win and it counts, but it doesn't amount to a lot. So I think a lot of people could rally around this fight. There's big fans of either guy. They know how to sell a pay-per-view. So I'd be cool with that, even if it was for a fictitious belt.
You know, we talked about this before, and here comes the first Chael reference. There it is. At Chael Sonnen, it says, you reach the top of the sport when whether or not you win or lose doesn't matter. I don't think whether or not these guys win or lose doesn't matter. Certainly doesn't matter if they're squared off against each other. So if they're both coming off losses, and we're like, okay, great, they both lost a couple of fights, here we are. I think this fight would do a huge number. It makes a lot of sense for Brooklyn to me. It seems like the kind of fight you would do in Brooklyn. You would need the BMF title to sort of vault it over. I really think usually they put title fights at the top of the card. Conor would be the exception to that. I mean, Conor would go above a title fight and Dana wouldn't even, he would just be like, come on, it's Conor. But I just can't see a lot of other things I'd want to see out of these guys. And if you want the relevance again, you want me to get excited again. I don't want to see Conor. There's nobody else.
Like, so would you even entertain, because you see it out there all the time, Reddit, whatever, like Conor McGregor, Charles Oliveira, like that has nothing. That means nothing to you.
No,
it doesn't mean anything to me either.
I just think that he's so outmatched by the guys that hold belts, he would need a fight where he could do the kind of thing that would have you at least entertaining that he could maybe win a title again. And Jorge Masvidal, for all that he is, could be knocked out by Conor McGregor. Like, he will leave himself exposed. He'll go in there throwing himself. It's going to be a fight. He's not going to just take him down. And, like, they're going in there to throw 4-ounce gloves and, you know, let the best man be the one standing at the end. So I think, this is the fight for me. I think this is the fight, and now's the time, which means we'll probably have it in 2 years.
Well, if you like a money fight and you like a fight of the night, John, Sean O'Malley sat down with ESPN this week and talked shop, with one of the major takeaways being that he loves the fact that Adrian Yanez called him out after beating Tony Kelly a few weeks ago. And I'm going to quote Sean O'Malley from this. He says, "No one calls me out. I don't know why. I don't know if it's a waste of time. They don't want to make an easy paycheck. They can say whatever they want, but I look at it as they know it's a tough fight." Now, John, everybody and their dog calls out Sean O'Malley, so I don't know what planet he's living on. If he ever listened to, and I wish I teed this up properly, who's the Adam that's on Mad Dog Radio, does the NFL show? On Planet Shine. Delusional? Yeah, Adam Schein, that's his thing. I mean, it seems like he's on Planet Delusional. He's been listening to football shows. But Rob Dvalishvili's called him out. He's a ranked opponent. He's going to be fighting Jose Aldo next. Ricky Simone's called him out as well. And coming up this weekend, like, Sean O'Malley's fighting Pedro Munhoz. It's his first ranked test. When he booked his fight with Haulian Paiva, it was believed that Paiva was a ranked opponent, but when they stepped in the octagon, both guys were unranked. We know that Sean O'Malley loves the unranked king nickname, but now he is, of course, ranked. So, John, is Sean O'Malley living in a fishbowl, or is he just, like, is he completely oblivious to all these callouts?
I think that he's living in a little bit of both. I think that he is – see, Sean O'Malley's got an interesting thing going on. At least when Chael was running his game back in the day, Chael reference number two, when Chael was running his thing back in the day, we knew he was smart, always, because he would say things that were so absurd that it was like, I was unaware that, you know, if you tapped, it ended the fight. I thought it ended the round. And we're like, Jesus, man, that's hilarious that you would say that, but obviously, you know, and blah, blah, blah. But the thing about O'Malley is he's such a pothead and he's such a nutcase that you really don't know what he knows and what he doesn't know. I think he's a little smarter, you know.
How does pre-cum work, John Franklin? Teach us a science lesson.
I think that I'll say this. I used to say this about people in a former job of mine. I would describe them as they're smarter than you think they are, but they're dumber than they think they are. And so somewhere in there, there lies a lot of delusion. And I think that that's kind of where he is. He thinks he's a little more profound than he actually is. But he's really kind of behind the scenes navigating things. And I think that to act oblivious to all the call-outs is a move to be like, I'm going to do what I want. I don't have to acknowledge these call-outs. Because if he acknowledges them, then he has to concede that he's not taking the fights. And if he's not taking the fights, then it's like, why? Are you scared of these guys? That's the thing. So I think that's why he's acting oblivious to them. But I do think he's aware.
Like, there's only one, like, documented case of a guy actually coming out and admitting to the fact that he's not, I wouldn't say ducking fights, but turning fights down currently. And it's Gregor Gillespie at 155 pounds. He's been ranked forever. He never takes any fights because he just turns a bunch of them down. Sean O'Malley fights often enough. He's had what? He's 7-1 Dana White's Contender Series and UFC. He's had plenty of fight of the nights. I think only one fight wasn't fight of the night or performance of the night bonus. So for him, things have gone incredibly well. Now, you look at the one loss. I don't like the fact that he kind of shuts it down. But when you're a guy like Sean O'Malley, you're polarizing no matter what you say, whether it's good for you, whether it's bad for you. Coming up through MMA, like, nobody gets through unscathed. Like, there's people that hate the nicest characters in MMA. I'm sure Roxanne Modafferi had her doubters on the way up through and even into retirement. So when I look at Sean O'Malley, yeah, he's got his own shtick. He's got a great merch line. He really knows how to brand himself well. So for him to say that, it probably puts the division on notice. Maybe a guy, and it might sound strange, but like one of these older guys that's a little long in the tooth, like Dominic Cruz is training with Lloyd Irvin this week, or maybe a guy like a Frankie Edgar, not necessarily Marlon Vera, because he's going to be calling him out the whole time, even though he beat him. Like, there's certain fighters out there that might be perking up when they hear something like this, especially when it's with ESPN. So listen, maybe he's a little bit oblivious, but we'll see how that runs.
All right, Craig, we move on. Let's talk about the ESPYs. I know you love them. I love them. They're going to be hosted by Steph Curry. But let's get to the thing that is relevant to this podcast, which is the best MMA fighter ESPY. The nominees this year are Alexander Volkanovski, Charles Oliveira, Kamaru Usman, Kayla Harrison. So my question to you is, who you got? And we'll get to my girl in a second because she should be on this list, but she's on a different one. Go.
What did the scale say the last time Charles Oliveira fought? It didn't say 155.0, so he can't be the winner. And I don't care what the scale said behind the scenes. There's no champion at lightweight right now. I love Charles Oliveira. I love what he did, but he can't win it for that reason. Alexander Volkanovski.
Hashtag hot take.
Wild. Alexander Volkanovski continues to win, beats a Korean zombie, looked amazing. But he still doesn't win. Kayla Harrison isn't beating great competition. She doesn't win. Kamaru Usman knocked out Gilbert Burns in 2021, Jorge Masvidal, and then beat Colby Covington in a rematch. Kamaru Usman, your ESPY MMA Fighter of the Year award. Not mine, but I was given four choices, so that's my winner.
And here's yours. I have no doubt this is going to be the person you would have chosen if you could choose. Nominated a different category. Best championship performance, Juliana, the Venezuelan vixen, Pena.
Yeah.
She is going up against Los Angeles Rams wide receiver Cooper Kupp, F1 driver Max Verstappen.
They just had the Canadian Grand Prix in Montreal. Let's go.
And recent Stanley Cup winner, get ready, it's going to get butchered, Kale McCarr. Kale Maker.
Kale McCarr.
First, look at that.
The Bobby Orr of this generation.
The Bobby Orr of this generation. I was just telling somebody the other day, I thought he was the Bobby Orr of this generation. Do you think Juliana Pena wins that one? And why wasn't she nominated for the other one?
No, because, like, football is more popular, right? And that Cooper Kupp catch at the end of that game, that kind of sealed the deal, didn't it?
All right.
Yeah, so I'm going to go that way.
She's got the belt. Who cares? I mean, listen, I think she should get all the accolades heaped on her as possible, but she's got the belt. She took down the GOAT. There we go.
Things heaped on Juliana Pena. Things heard on the pod. Listen, John, I'm going to punch it up. So under the radar fight coming up this weekend, rematch between Jim Miller, Cowboy Cerrone at 170 pounds because both Bobby Green and Joe Lauzon weren't able to tango with their originally scheduled pairings. Do you remember the first fight just off the top of your head?
No.
I had to go back and watch it. But they met in 2014. It was a great fight. They bang. It's a Julian Lane fight. Cerrone ends it with a right head kick that finishes the action. Someone will pull after this fight in the number one all-time wins category with 25 because right now both of those guys and Andrei Arlovsky are tied with 24. So listen.
Yeah. I have a question. Andrei Arlovsky, Hall of Famer? Yes or no?
Yeah, I mean, you know, OG, I think he builds
a case now that I know he's got 24 wins. He's got a longevity case.
But when he won that belt, his opponent looked like a guy that just walked off the street. But regardless,
everybody looked like a guy that walked off the street back in the day.
A guy with fang mouth guard and frosted tips, not Andrei Arlovsky. But how jazzed are you for Miller versus Cerrone? And what do you make of some of these fights, especially when it comes to the spots that these guys are in their respective careers?
What do I make of this fight? I don't make much of it. But listen, is it going to be a good fight? Probably. Miller's talking about fighting at UFC 300. So I'm not going to get my wish, which would be the end of this fight. One guy gets their hand raised and they both take their gloves off and put them in the ring and just say, all right, here we are. Because these guys are going to fight until they're literally carted out of, you know, the city or the venue or what. Like, these guys are just going to go until... You know, the old saying is fighters don't retire. The ring retires them. These guys are going to take it to another level. That's neither here nor there. I think it'll be a good fight. I mean, I don't know how much. Do you think this is going to be a fight where they are trying to fight an old school fight? Or do you think they're both going to look at each other and go, we've been in this shit way too long. Let's have a gentleman's agreement that this is going to be basically a submission underground fight with a couple of punches. What are you expecting out of this fight?
I think it's going to go just like their first one. Because, I mean, Jim Miller is getting ready for Bobby Green. So Miller was probably going to strike a bit and then try and take him down, but Bobby Green has good takedown defense, and Cerrone's been competing in grappling tournaments, and he was going to fight Joe Lauzon at 155. So maybe out of both of those, they decide to grapple, but in their first fight, they didn't grapple at all, and it was just like a Muay Thai fight. So I'd be cool if that's what it was again. I think that's what's going to happen, and Cerrone's 0-4 with a no contest in his last five fights, and Jim Miller's 3-2. And he's just knocked out Eric Gonzalez and Nicolas Mata not that long ago. Like, his last fight was Mata, and he knocked him out. So I think Miller's going to win. I think it's going to be a great fight. But, I'm cool with that one, and I'm cool with Robbie Lawler, Brian Barberena. I think those are going to be great fights.
When you think of those two fighters, what is the thing that you would most want to see from them in any fight, much less this one, that would make you – like, for me, when I think of Donald Cerrone, it's just whipping leg kicks. Like, and with Jim Miller, it's just in the pocket swinging. So if I get those two guys, if those two guys show up and are doing those two things, I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm good with that. And like, Cerrone hurt Miller in that first fight with body kicks too. And like, you think Cerrone has great body kicks, but what's his big kryptonite? Receiving body kicks. So I'm down for whatever. I think it's going to be a great fight. I'm not down for what Sean Strickland accuses Israel Adesanya to have on his computer, but I'm down.
You know what's interesting? There's an old saying that says, you know, the thing that your enemy chooses to torture you with is the thing they most fear. It's interesting that Cerrone's such a great body kicker and so susceptible to him.
Sounds all right, like
we move
Harry
on,
Potter
Craig.
Line.
Right? We move on to sparring sessions. I got an interesting one this week. Tonight, probably as we speak, Daniel Cormier and Khabib Nurmagomedov are going into the UFC Hall of Fame. Interesting they went in together. But my question for you is, who do you think is more important to the history of MMA, Khabib Nurmagomedov or Daniel Cormier?
That's a really hard one because they're linked too. Like, same gym, they're always pumping each other up. Like, it really is weird, but I just want to share quickly a moment. So somewhere in this office, I think it's in the closet, I have a Daniel Cormier picture. It used to be in my old office, of him slamming Dan Henderson. And it's cool. Like, the colors are cool. I put it in a really nice frame. And then I put this one in a dollar store frame. But it's Khabib just hammering down. So we got to meet him in a Metro PCS when Craig Allen was just an MMA fan. And I went to one of those fan experience things at UFC 220. And my buddy was with me, Mike. And we all printed off pictures to get signed because we figured they're not going to have pictures. And when Mike goes up ahead of me, he's like, talking with Khabib, and Khabib's actually smiling. Like, it was kind of weird. And Khabib points at that tree and he laughs. He's like, this my favorite one. I beat him very bad. So, I mean, I love what Khabib did for the sport. Obviously, he rose up an entire stable of fighters. You look at the guys coming into that region now, not just in the UFC, but in other promotions. It's a giant deal. Plus, Khabib has his own promotion, but Daniel Cormier is everywhere. And to go from a guy who entered that Strikeforce tournament as an alternate to the success that he had at light heavyweight and heavyweight in the UFC, heavyweight still holds water with a lot of people. So to me, I have Cormier just slightly above him, but like, they're both like 1A, 1B.
I have Cormier way above him. And okay. And I'll tell you why. Because let's talk about, well, first of all, if we put this in the scope of the UFC, it does get a little closer. If we put this in the scope of MMA, Daniel Cormier's leaps and bounds, what he did in Strikeforce, winning that Grand Prix, holding that belt. I think, listen, I'm the king of Khabib is overrated. Not as a fighter, but in terms of his legacy. He did not do as much as people like to claim he did. He was very dominant in his career. He really was only challenged a couple of times. And I think that now that could just speak to his dominance, or that could speak to the matchmaking. But I think you cannot tell the history. I don't want to say you couldn't tell the history of the lightweight division without Khabib. That's a huge reach on my part to say that. I do think there are much bigger pieces of the lightweight history than Khabib. You cannot tell the history of light heavyweight without Daniel Cormier. And you cannot tell the history of heavyweight without Daniel Cormier. Because Daniel Cormier solidified the legacies of both John Jones and Stipe Miocic, who arguably are the best fighters. He was the Joe Frazier to Miocic at heavyweight and Jones at light heavyweight. So for me, that now, was he on the losing end there? Yes. And that does take a little bit, that does diminish him a little bit. But the fact that he was even able to do that, he's a double champ, Khabib is not. Not that he couldn't have been. But for me, I think that Cormier has a much bigger place. And that doesn't even begin to start to discuss everything he's done outside of the cage.
Yeah.
But I now mean, listen, I will say this. In the defense of your point, if 10 years from now, the MMA is just covered in Russian fighters, and they're all, then, you know, obviously Khabib's probably had a bigger impact on the roster than DC did, for sure. But he hasn't done as much as DC did in the cage, in my opinion.
And thick boy Khabib, you know, maybe he comes back at middleweight. Who knows? But yeah, when you do look at it for strength of schedule, for every Derek Lewis to Daniel Cormier, there's a Daryl Horcher to Khabib. So it is kind of tough. Huh. Yikes.
So for this week's featured segment, I'm going to flip it around. I had an idea. It's very long-winded. We've done it before. Maybe we'll do it next week. The catch-up. Because I need to be caught up, because, you know, we'll get into my little absence from the MMA world here shortly, and why it happened, and if it's, I don't want to say if it's valid, but what may have led to it. Obviously, there's some busyness in my life, but also, you know, if there's great fights, you're going to be drawn to it. So we're not going to do the catch up. I'm going to flip the featured segment and ask you this, and we can do this off the top of our head. Independence Day is coming up, July 4th. Let's do, between the two of us, top 10 American-born fighters. And because it's Canada Day, if you would like, you can do top 10 Canadian-born fighters. We certainly can't flip this, because if you think I'm going to do top 10 Canadian-born fighters, your ass is out of luck.
Canadian fighters. George St. Pierre, Rory MacDonald, Carlos Newton, Mark Hominick. So there, I've already got four. Harold Howard. If you're coming on, come on.
You can't not mention Harold Howard.
So we have five. Now it gets tricky. Patrick Cote, I have six. I got to keep thinking on this one. This is tough. They put you on the spot. We got six. Who else would there be? Sarah Kaufman's Canadian. She did quite a bit with Invicta. Other three. Tim Haag. Ryan Jimmo from New Brunswick. And now I need one more. Ooh. Chris Horodesky. You never hear about him. He had a good run. There's 10. There's 10 Canadian fighters.
Okay, so here's what I'm going to ask you to do. While I am doing my list. So I went to Tapology, and I went to a fighter I knew would be ranked. And I went to Tapology's greatest fighters of all time. I'm going to go down a list, see how I feel about American board fighters. If in the time that I'm doing that, you'd like to check it out for Canadian fighters. If you're happy with the list, I'm happy with the list.
All I'll say is there's one guy that pops out at the top of my mind. Now, we did just talk about Stipe. I think he's up there. The most, like, American fighter that I can think of is the guy that walks out to Tom Petty is Chris Weidman, daddy's boy.
Okay, so here's what we got. I'll give you Tapology, and then – so what I'm going to do is I'm going to write the first 10 Tapology fighters, and then we'll go through and we'll knock them down. All right, so we got John Jones.
Yeah.
We got Demetrius Johnson. We got, Russian, Brazilian, Stipe. DC, judgment call. Are we going to call
Kamaru? He's ahead of Stipe.
Randy Couture.
Fair enough.
Max Holloway.
Now we got to take a pause here. Can I take like Sarah Kaufman out and can I claim Brock Lesnar as Canadian?
I think you can.
Okay.
Matt Hughes. Dominic Cruz.
Where's BJ Penn?
Right here, BJ Penn.
Okay.
So what's that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. One more. Who's next? Henry Cejudo.
Yeah.
And after that's Chuck Liddell. Okay, so this is the list I got. You tell me how you feel about it. John Jones.
Where's Jason Miller and where's Chael Sonnen in that list?
They're way too low. Chael Sonnen is he was number one. I started at two, sorry.
Okay.
Chael's the greatest fighter of all time. He's undefeated. So I got John Jones, Demetrius Johnson, Stipe Miocic, DC, Randy Couture, Max Holloway, Matt Hughes, Dominic Cruz, BJ Penn, Henry Cejudo.
Straight up, I don't have any arguments at all with any of them. Maybe okay. You change some of the rankings a little bit, but Topology did a pretty damn good job.
I agree. Do you think that, and just so you guys have some context out there, a couple of guys after this were Chuck Liddell, Dan Henderson, Cain Velasquez, Frankie Edgar, TJ Dillashaw, Dustin Poirier, Tito, Tony Ferguson. Then we start to get like guys that don't deserve to be in this conversation. But Cejudo's at 10. Does he deserve to be higher?
Do you put him ahead of Dominic Cruz? Like, Dominic Cruz is the best bantamweight of all time. Henry Cejudo is pretty damn good too, but he's not better than Dominic Cruz in the overall layout.
BJ Penn, he's at 9. Does the end?
The end doesn't bother me. It bothers some people. It doesn't bother me, though.
8, Dominic Cruz. Higher or lower than Matt Hughes? It's tricky.
I'd say higher. But it's a GSP thing.
Okay, so
he beat
we'll
him
switch.
Once.
So we'll switch Hughes and Cruz. Dominic Cruz deserved to be higher than Max Holloway. Holloway's got a great resume.
Yeah, I'd say no. No.
Okay, so now we get into, should Max Holloway be higher than Randy Couture?
No.
Should Randy Couture be higher than Daniel Cormier?
No.
Should Daniel Cormier be higher than Stipe?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're switching that. Now, here's where it gets interesting, because if we
the
now
two
have,
are goats. The top two are goats, but the bigger goat's better than the smaller goat.
Well, here's the problem. Here's my only pushback. DC has two belts and Demetrius Johnson doesn't.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking Johnson, Jones.
No, you're right. That's what it is. DC's at 3. Demetrius Johnson's at 2. John Jones is at 1.
Yeah, but Demetrius, yeah, you could put Cormier ahead of Demetrius Johnson. Yeah.
So it's 1-2, Jones, Cormier.
Yeah, like I'm thinking of Demetrius Johnson had to fight Wilson Hayes and Ray Borg in title fights. It's not like Daniel Cormier was, again, for every Derek Lewis, there's a Wilson Hayes, but like, there's not a lot of Wilson Hayes's.
And I would argue that when DC fought Derek Lewis, I mean, was that peak Derek Lewis when he fought him?
Kinda. And you're gonna get more Derek Lewis references as this goes on, but yeah. I mean,
DC
my Canadian
was
list
quietly DC was quietly dominant. You know what I mean? Like the only people that really got close to him are like all timers. You know what I mean? But like, you know, I mean, he split with Gustafson. I mean, like, choked out Anthony Johnson twice. Ozdemir.
Yeah, the last one, Johnson was like, I'm going in to wrestle, which was weird.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at the Canadian list. I missed out on fellow Maritimer TJ Grant. Ryan Jimmo's there. Jordan Meehan, I missed. John McDessie. Sam Stout. Nick the Promise Ring. Great nickname. Roland DeLorme, Jesse Ronson, Mike Ricci, Sean Pearson. And then, yeah, it just kind of continues. Mitch Gagnon.
If you factor in the nickname, the ring just like skyrockets.
Claude Patrick. Jesse Bongfelt.
All right, Craig, let's move on to the socials. Let's start before the gram. Valerie Lareda is leaving MMA for WWE. How long did we see this coming? Do you think that there was any meat left on that bone of an MMA career? Or do you think, like, immediately she goes to WWE, they start some sort of, I don't even know how much Ronda Rousey is still in WWE, but do they immediately start some kind of angle with her? Like, we shouldn't have expected Loretta to be long for this thing, right? It was just kind of her way to gain attention.
She said the whole time she was with Bellator, she wanted to build her brand, she wanted to build it on social media. She accomplished that. She went 4-1 in MMA and started off on the main card. Like, she said that herself on the MMA Hour this week. But what I found weird was apparently Loretta kind of hooked up with WWE before WrestleMania, and the conversations have been ongoing. The one thing that I found really weird is that Scott Coker is like, Valerie Loretta, thank you so much for being with the promotion. She still is an active fighter with Bellator. She will still compete with Bellator. We're really excited that we let our fighters go outside of MMA for boxing opportunities and non-sports opportunities, but she'll be back. And then Valerie Loretta is like, no, I'm done MMA. I'm doing wrestling. So I don't know. It's weird. And to further that point with Ronda Rousey, I saw a clip of her on Twitter today that said this is what people expected Ronda Rousey to do to Holly Holm. I don't know if you saw it. She's against Triple H, and she just, like, boxes him up in a corner, and then he comes out all dazed, and she pins him. But, like, I don't know how Valerie Loretta is going to make out. Obviously, with that, you know, Taekwondo background that she's had since she was a kid, I would think you're going to be incredibly flexible, and you can translate well in professional wrestling. And listen, I mean, cardio-wise, you're going to be there. It's just going to take a little bit of, you know, charisma to get it done. But you've seen her do her dances after she wins and before she fights. So I think she'll do well. I'm just a little weirded out by the fact that she says she's completely done with MMA and thank Bellator for everything. And Bellator is like, but we still got her. She's still ours.
Well, I think Scott Coker understands something that Valerie Loretta doesn't, which is you don't really gain anything by telling anyone you're finished with anything. And as long as you know, like, think about these guys that have retired and still kind of keep a toe in, that's what I think he's doing there. Like, you know, the more, I think that anything Valerie Loretta does for the rest of her career in WWE will also be covered on, like, MMA Fighting and those kind of websites. But if it wasn't going to be, if you still have it, Gina Carano, which we'll get to in a second, Gina Carano's still talking about fighting, right? She never really closed the door. And anytime there's, like, a rumor about her, she's like, we'll see. We're not going to see. But she knows there's more value in keeping that fan base, right? And that the way you keep the fan base is being like, maybe, and bite my bottom lip and the meme and we're good. I just think that's what Loretta should do. I don't know what value there is in her closing that door. To this point, I want you to give me odds of this happening. I think the odds of this happening are 100. But now you tell me. Do you know who else just signed with WWE?
Gable Stevenson?
Logan Paul.
Oh, okay.
Signed officially, like, sit down, contract, Triple H over you. He just signed. Dating rumors. Valerie Loretta, Logan Paul in the next year.
Isn't Valerie Loretta going out with my guy, Cleveland Browns' own Donovan Peoples-Jones?
The fact that I don't know that is why there's going to be a rumor about her and Logan Paul. Because she's going to understand the value
of... There aren't many good stories surrounding my Browns these days, so no, that's sir. One. That's one.
No, sir. Craig, we move on to one Twitter hitter. 16 years ago this week at the Hard Rock, Anderson Silva put it on Chris Lieben. I am going to tell you, because I was probably your age when this fight happened. When I saw this fight, okay, I was familiar with Pride and still didn't know a lot about Anderson Silva. Like, I knew about, you know, Sakuraba and, you know, Vitor and all these guys, right? I got all the DVDs, Collision Course. I had all that stuff, right? Which I still have somewhere around here. But so I knew about those guys. And this guy kind of slipped through the cracks. I wasn't up on game. And I thought, well, first of all, I thought Lieben was going to beat him, because I knew Lieben from Tough. And I was as surprised at the way that Anderson Silva dismantled that kid as I've been surprised of anything in MMA. So I'm not going to ask you what you thought about that fight, because 16 years ago, you were probably 4 or 5. You might have been still in diapers. Who knows? But what was the fight that surprised you the most ever? where you were just like, Jesus, didn't see that coming. And was it a high profile fight? Was it just kind of like...
No, and it's the example I use all the time, and I'm actually going to use it at the end of the show, but I went back and watched this fight before the show when I saw that this was in the notes, because it took me 49 seconds. That's how long that fight took. And for Chris Lieben, he was able to beat a couple of Silvas in his career. Vanderlei Silva, Jay Silva, but it's like he never trained for straight punches. And Anderson Silva, he's credited with two knockdowns. There's a flurry that knocks down Lieben. There's a knee that knocks down Lieben. He drops him with like the first jab he throws, and they don't even consider that a knockdown. Maybe it was like a misstep, but like Lieben just comes in looping, and Anderson just hits him right down the front. Like Anderson didn't take any damage. So it's a wild fight if you've never seen it. Go back and watch it. My favorite UFC debut, my favorite, like, wow, I didn't know this guy. And I say it every time. Like, I actually have goosebumps in the office. Matt and I talk about this a lot. When Gavin Tucker made his UFC debut against Sam Cecilia on the main card of a fight night in Halifax at the Scotiabank place, I think it is now, everybody was on their feet, and it's the loudest audience pop I've ever heard. And like, I've been to things before, and that was the loudest I've ever heard. And then for him to go out and have a dominant cruise, like stunning on Sam Cecilia, that's been in the UFC for a while. Like, I never thought, like, you look at Gavin Tucker's record before he came to the UFC, he was beating nobodies. No offense to those people from the East Coast of Canada, but nobodies. And then all of a sudden, it's like, wow, this guy's on the map. And listen, if he didn't get hurt, if he fought more, maybe he'd be more top of mind for a lot of UFC fans. But like that, go back and watch that performance. That card is awesome.
I agree. Great reference. All right, let's move on to posting the book. Let's talk about some fights that if you are on Facebook, you would love us to talk about, which is Conor Floyd 2. And Gina Carano versus Ronda Rousey. Dana White has said he's all but closing the book on Conor Floyd 2. Conor has business in the UFC, which probably means Jorge Masvidal. So here's my question to you. And this is kind of a more of when we do like a featured segment kind of thing, but I'm going to ask you in this segment. What do you think the greater likelihood is? We see Conor Floyd 2 or Gina versus Ronda?
Conor Floyd 2, and listen, my wife's not gonna like this. My dogs might not like this. They might wake up, but I'm gonna do it anyway. When Dana White went to Toronto, Canada for the presser and went, "The reigning defending!" Like, I bet he's all over getting back into a presser like that. It seems like he enjoyed himself a lot, like just beating up on Steven Espinoza. So I'm all about it. Floyd's still been taking these fights. Who was the guy that he beat here recently? I didn't watch. Did anybody watch that?
I don't think so.
Yeah, he fought some random guy here not that long ago. So I think the likelihood of it happening is pretty good. I mean, Floyd's kept himself busy lately in these boxing exhibitions. I'd sooner watch that. Like, I know the buildup might have been cheesy and it turned some people off, but like, I like that stuff. So I'd be cool with that. I think Carano Rousey, I don't think it has the same likelihood or like pay-per-view gate.
Well, listen. This is where it gets interesting, because I don't know, based on what Floyd's doing now, if he would be open to fighting Conor McGregor in the way that he fought him before. It won't be sanctioned. It won't be like, you know, I just don't think he has that anymore. But I will say this. I looked it up real quick. He offered Conor $157.9 million for that fight. It says Gervonta Davis and Ryan Garcia would be the undercard. So Dana's out on it, but listen, that kind of money talks and you know what walks. All right, we move on to start the conversation. Craig, we all know sports have their ebbs and flows. Typically, it is connected to the seasons and where they're at in them. Do you think MMA is going through an ebb right now? Do you think I'm going through an ebb with my passion for MMA? Where do you see the sport, and why do you think it's where you say it is?
There's a lot of it. There's a lot of it, and there's fights that aren't like they used to be. So like when you said like Chris Lieben, Anderson Silva, like those were big fights. It was at the Hard Rock. That card was probably loaded. I already touched on this. I mean, that card that was in Halifax, John, I'm going to read you, like, this is Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. The last card that they had before this one was Rory McDonald and Tarek Saffiedine, former, what was he, WEC champ? These are the fighters that were on this UFC card. First fight, Gerald Meerschaert, Ryan Jaynes. Thiago Santos wheel kicks Jack Marshman. Then it was Ayman Zahabi, Reginaldo Vieira. It was a really good fight. Randa Markos, Carlos Sparza. Santiago Ponzinibbio, Nordin Taleb. Paul Felder, Alex Ricci. Paul Felder knocks him out with an elbow. Sarah McMahon, Gina Mazzani. After Sarah McMahon had challenged for the title. Elias Theodoru, Mutante Fajeya. Gavin Tucker, Sam Cecilia, Johnny Hendricks, Hector Lombard, Derek Lewis, and Travis Brown. That's Halifax for a fight night card. You heard those names like Gerald Meerschaert, Ponzinibbio, Paul Felder, Theodoru, Canadian, so that's why he was on the card. But like, that was a fight night card in Canada. Some of these cards that you're getting right now, people don't want to hear it from me. And Matt and I try to punch everything up and be really, really positive. But we said some things here in the last couple of weeks that weren't positive, and people lost their minds. We said, like, Carlos Ulbricht had bad cardio in his UFC debut. He had really good combinations, really flashy striker, but it's hard to kind of place somebody at a ceiling when they're 6-1 in the UFC and they're in their late 20s. It doesn't matter what you did in kickboxing. Sometimes it's hard to see it translate in MMA. Now, he ended up getting a knockout over Tafan Chukwe, so all things are forgiven. But the guy that he beat before that threw 13 strikes in his fight, and he looked decent against Fabio Schrant, but Fabio Schrant wasn't UFC level. We also said that JP Bayes and Cody Durden weren't necessarily UFC level. Well, if you're a fighter in the flyweight division and you're not ranked, there's only about three or four of you. So there are some of these fights, John, that I look at and I go, like, I have to take a deep breath and go, geez, like, I got to get excited for this. This isn't really what it used to be. So I agree. I mean, the UFC has an obligation to have what? Is it 40 some odd cards a year now, when they used to have what, 12, 14? Like, there's so much, and there's so many people on this roster, and there's so many people you have to familiarize yourself with, and there's so many things you have to get excited about every week. Plus, give up your Saturday night every single weekend. And oh, by the way, that's not if there's Bellator on Thursday, there's PFL on Friday, or vice versa. There's a big Ryzen card. There's a big Ryzen card this weekend. You think I'm going to catch it? Fuck no. I've got a live show Saturday night through the main card, and then Ryzen's after that. I'm going to bed. So, like, it's really, really hard to get excited every single week. And I can understand why some people only get up for the big time pay-per-view cards like we have this week, and they maybe skip out on some of the fight night cards because it is hard. And some of the talent's not like what it used to be when you kind of had that condensed roster and bigger pay-per-view events.
So the question comes back to something we've talked about for a long time is there a structure that works that makes this more compelling? And I go back to this, you hate it every time I bring it up, but here it is, a season. Does it make sense to start the season in International Fight Week or end the season in International Fight Week? And listen, I'll just say this to Dana. You could do a lot worse than ending the season at International Fight Week and starting it at the Brooklyn card. So you're effectively, and maybe Dana, you want the answer. Here's the answer. Okay, the answer is July 9th is the last date of the season, right? International Fight Week in the card. Last day of the season. And while you're dark, August, September, maybe not October, August and September. For August and September, here comes Dana. You ready? Run the Contender Series. In August and September, and give it full dedication. October, tough. November, Brooklyn. You start the whole thing over.
I don't hate that. Like, because right now, the only break they take is what, 2 weeks, maybe three, the end of December into January, and then they usually kick it off with a decent card. But, like, it's, like, folks, you got to, it's hard to get excited for some of these. Even for me, like, I do this every single week. People goof and, oh, your picks suck and this and that, and usually they're pretty good. But, like, when you put, like, I have seven full pages front to back of notes on these damn fights, and you spend hours and hours and hours on them, and then you look at what you were doing like 4 years ago and you look at what it is today, it's not the same product that they're putting out there. It's a little bit harder to get jazzed up for some of the fights that are happening. It is. No, and it runs you into the ground too.
Yeah, no one would go for this, but imagine if each week on the Contender Series, you put a high-level fight. Either you start the Contender Series with that high-level fight, or you end the Contender Series. Like, that week's Contender Series either starts with a high-level fight or ends with one, just because why not? And then, you know, now what happened ultimately is the UFC would say, we're going to put a whole fucking card. And that, yeah. Then we're back to square one. Now we're doing a card each week. But I disagree with that. All right, Craig, let's move on to finish strong. I'm going to hit you with three topics and three topics only. Tell me whatever's on your mind about these three topics, and we'll move on with our lives. Bellator, where's it at? What are you excited about?
Yeah, so this is going to go from I can speak out of one side of my mouth, and I'm going to speak out of the other one. Have more cards. Like, Bellator, what are we doing? When are the cards? They never happen. And their fascination with going to, like, Europe is cool, but Canadians still want Bellator. Like, Aaron Jeffrey knocked a guy out and said, hey, let's go to Canada. And they never do. Scott Coker just kind of kicks it around, and every year somebody asks Scott Coker about Canada, and it's like, yep, we're coming back, and then they never do. Are you going to get a TV deal, Scott? Yep, we're going to do it, and they're live and free on YouTube. So I always want the best for Bellator, but they don't have enough fights, and they never come to Canada.
PFL Anthony Pettis says it's way different going through this sort of structure than the UFC, clearly. But what do you think?
It's way different. Even Chris Curtis said this the last week. He's like, yeah, you know, I had to change my style up, and it wasn't me. And then he comes into outside of the UFC, and then in the UFC, and he's just completely mowed people over. So, yeah, I like the PFL format. There's definitely a place for it, but you got to realize what you're signing up for. It's not that easy.
Yuri Prochka is the 205-pound champion for a long time, until John Jones is interested in taking the belt back, until somebody else comes along. Like, do you think this kid has it?
Yeah.
Like, can he be a champion with a thin division for a while, or is he just –
I don't think he's like a one and done flash in the pan. We did a rank the divisions thing here with Fight Night Picks, and we did a March Madness bracket. And the way the tournament went, it was John Jones on one side, Prochka on the other. Jones had a harder run. I picked Prochka to win. And that was like 2 years ago or 3 years ago. So I think he's got plenty left in the tank. I know he gets hit a lot and whatever, but yeah, I think he beats just about anybody in that division.
All right, guys, there you have it. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FFP. I can be followed at Some Corner Man. Another one's in the books. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Maybe, probably.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week. Craig, say something witty.
Let's get back into it.